call the Town of Michigan's recess meeting for one recess when I recommend. And call Chairman Trent of the county.
Turkey Kent will reconvene from the seventh, coming session also.
Call Commissioner Randy Westbrook to lead some prayer.
Lord, we are gathered today to put up out of the bench for the Town of Winds and Turkey County. Please give us your insight, wisdom, and blessings on matters that we discuss until we reach a successful conclusion. Please keep your one segment of daily travels home today. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'd like to welcome the county commissioners and county staff and particularly to Dr. Christian and Dr. Ridge. Appreciate y'all coming. We really look forward to your presentation. And at this time, let's get here for a little bit. I'd like to ask County Manager Scott Sauer to come forward. The last few years, we have had really unparalleled success, cooperation with the county and the town, and much of it we think is your doing. So we really appreciate it. We've enjoyed working with you. You've done a really good job. I want to present you with the key to the city. The mayor did say it fit the safety back there.
Did you get it?
Yes, I did.
I'm not sure how it's mine. Cool.
That's so cool. I need to see you back.
How well are glad we could do it. Particularly in your meeting.
Oh, good.
Well, we know we're anticipating this report, and we're really pleased to see it, and some of us have had sneak previews. And this time, let's turn it over to Dr. Christian and Dr. Roots.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for having us to share with you our final report for the Turkey County project, Turkey Windsor project. I'd first like to acknowledge Bob Christian. We put together this, what I think, from a science point of view, is a very strong document on the natural waterways of Turkey County. And if you're not aware, Turkey County has absolutely world-class water system.
Hey, I've heard that a time ago.
I don't know if I'll live long enough, but one of our goals is to turn this into a national water trail system, which would be recognition by the federal government as a unique body of water. And when I talk about a body of water, it's a whole system. But what surrounds Turkey County and cuts it right down the middle are four world-class water systems. I don't know what else to call it. It's awesome. And I started working on these waters back in 1964, so I have a few years. We've done work off and on up here on the Roanoke and the Kishai. I've been up here working with the mayor in previous storms that have happened. But this opportunity that we've had, NCLO, which stands for North Carolina Land and Water, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We don't pay anybody, so your money goes directly to work. When Jim and John came to me and said, we got flooding problems. Is there any way you can help us? And I said yes. And it's been a pleasure working with Bertie County, and I can honestly say I've worked with most of the counties in eastern North Carolina. I haven't worked with a county that's worked better together in town with the town and the county and with more pleasant people than what we've encountered in the past 2 years in this project. It's been great. There's three prongs to our project. Prong number one, I think of it as a three-legged stool. And one of the things that I was asked to deal with in this project was the flooding. But if you're going to put the concept, water concept, together and understand what's going on with respect to the flooding, then you have to put the resources together first. So the low-hanging fruit, and this was easy, was our report number one, which was a report, and I'll say, I'm not going to talk about this tonight, but this is the ecotourism that's based on the natural resources and cultural resources of your region. This is your future, in my opinion. This will be jobs. This will be something that can build, that you have, that can go forward. You have incredible resources and the ability to live with these resources, which include the storms. We have to learn how to live with the storms. And but number two is that doesn't do any good if you don't have an educated population that understands what these resources are. So I insisted that we have an educational component. And last year I brought in other monies, and we spent some of your money, but mostly outside money from some of these organizations and a few others, that we had a science teacher workshop program that went all year. We worked with the superintendent, the principals, but primarily the science teachers. And it was all about what's in your backyard. How do you build science around what's in your backyard? You don't have to go travel around the world because you got it all right here. You got water, you got the earth, you got the minerals, you got the processes and the dynamics. And so we got the teachers to look about, when we talk about water, water's everywhere. And every school's got a gutter. So you get a rain, you get atmosphere processes going on, you measure those. You watch that rain, you see where it goes, it soaks in the ground, it goes through the trees up back into the atmosphere, it evaporates, it floods the ditches around your school. And you can do all that right there without any money and any fanciness. You can make it all work. So our second report was what we gave the teachers for their use in the school system. The third report is this one, the one we're going to talk about tonight, flood dynamics in the Bertie Water Crescent. And the Bertie Water Crescent is the complex of the Chemung River. Y'all seen these maps? I'm going to show these a lot. This map is really critical. The teachers all have these maps, and hopefully they're using them in their classroom. This is a start with the teachers, we put this one up there. They didn't know what it was. I didn't tell them a word. I said, you live on that map somewhere. Here's a name tag. Go up and put it on that map. Where you think you live? Well, they scratched their heads and they ended up putting it all over because they thought it was a painting. And so they did this, and then I said, okay, what this really is the Chemung River estuary over here, coming from Cow Point up here, down Albemarle Sound here, and the Roanoke River coming all the way up here, and ultimately up onto the Piedmont to the dams and the Roanoke River. And then we have this red here is a big platform. It's a plateau, it's high land. 70, 80, 90 feet high, and it's dissected by all these green pieces of water that come across here and just chop it up. with the Kusai River here, Broquist Creek down here, Salmon Creek. All of these come together and form the Bertie Water Crescent. And that's a system, it's a complex system. None of these water bodies stand on their own. They all interact, and I sort of like to think about this water system sort of like the human body. The body, you got your nervous system, you got your blood system, you got your muscle system, you got your brain, you got your heart, and they all interact. And you can't live with one without the other. Well, these water bodies do exactly the same thing. And what Bob and I are going to show you here, and the plan is to go through it, hopefully a quick slide show, to show you exactly how we did it, put the picture together. And then the second hour, we'd like to go over some recommendations. We'd like a discussion. When we get there, Alan's going to hand out a piece of the report that's got the recommendations and a summary statement in it. And everybody, if you get a report, read it. And you're required to read it. This is your future, and you need to understand it. Whether you know anything about it now or not, doesn't matter. Let's understand it. This puts the whole thing together. And it's based on what we've done, not the past history. There's all sorts of history. There's good stuff in there. There's recommendations that are really good. There might be a couple of recommendations that are controversial. There'll be some recommendations that maybe they aren't so good. But there's a lot for Bertie County and the town of Windsor to do to maintain high water quality and minimize the impact of these storms. We can't stop the storms, but if we understand how they work, we can minimize them, the impact of them. And that's what I like to think of as learning to live with the storms. They've been here forever, they're not going away, so how do we live with them? So with that general introduction, I would like to start. This is what we call this whole project here. And what we're trying to do here is to integrate these complex drainage systems, as I said, to minimize storm impacts, but also to maximize the environmental viability. How can we use this going forward? What's the potential here? What's the potential for jobs and so forth? So this is our website. These are the funds that we've used directly in this project along with, for the science part, but there were several others for different parts that went into this, as well as the money from Bertie County and the town of Windsor. So this is what I call the Bertie Peninsula. And it's just like the Albemarle Peninsula. Albemarle Peninsula is part of the language out here. Everybody knows what the Albemarle Peninsula is. You get on Highway 64, go out the Albemarle Peninsula to Roanoke Island to the Outer Banks. Well, this is the Bertie Peninsula. There's others down here, Pamlico Peninsula, Carteret Peninsula. These are structurally controlled by the underlying geology. They've been there for a long, 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 long time in its history. We're not going to go into that history, but this white up here, that's not snow, it's not clouds, that's elevation. Over here you see the elevation. And this is topography. What we've done is just taken a topographic data set that North Carolina is the only state in the nation that has full coverage of this special data. And it is so accurate to that level. It is used, it was developed as a result of Hurricane Floyd, when the federal government said, we're going to upgrade your water flood maps. And they said they'll do it one county per year. How many counties do we have? The state of North Carolina said, no, that doesn't cut it. Said, you give us the money, $25 million, if I remember right, is the amount that came in, and we'll use this new technology to produce these maps. And we have these in our data set, and we can look at an individual property and down. If you're laying out there, your map is part of the topography. If you're taking a sun bath out there in your backyard or something. So these are incredible. And the data set's bigger than any given teacher can begin to use. But a school could have this data on their computer systems. And you can put the kids to work with this thing, because they're all computer wizards this day and age. This is something you can really build with. But you, I use this all the way through the talk now, because this is the Piedmont up here. This is plus 100 feet up. This is a Roanoke Lake, the dam, Roanoke Dam's right there, Roanoke Rapids here. If you fish, you'll fish at Weldon, at the falls right there. You're coming off the Piedmont, what we call the fall line, down here onto the coastal plain as you follow the Roanoke River. The Bertie, this right here, is what we call the Wicomico Terrace. It's a flat terrace. It sits up there at 80 to 90 feet and runs right into the Chowan River here. This is where the big bluffs are that are collapsing out there. This is the Kashai River. The headwaters of the Kashai start up here in the highest area up here in these Pecosins. And they feed down here to Windsor, which is located right there on that little funny thing we call the Windsor Ridge. And you're here only because of that topography. You'll see that later on, that close-up. And then this green stuff is what we call the Talbot Terrace. And your tall glass of water and Salmon Creek property and so forth have a smaller bluff that's 30, 40 feet high that comes off of this bigger terrace that comes along here. So with that, our three goals for the North Carolina Rivers to Sounds program in Bertie, Windsor Crescent. Goal one was sustainable tourism. Built around the natural resource base of the system. And we produced this set of what we call water hubs to take advantage of all the different kinds of water. Water hub number one was Windsor because they're the furthest along with the development of ecotourism. Here an example in fact, if you have the sheet out there, one of the things we did was bring Tom Earnhardt into the program. We made two films for his program, Exploring North Carolina. The first one is a general one, but it starts out right here in Bertie County. It's what's the future of sea level rise based on culture, the cultural history. And the second one deals with these ecotourism sites right here and the future of Bertie water. And you have several members that are sitting in here that are stars in the program. And Tom tells me that it's a very, very, very good program. So you want to see those. And, the second part of the program was the environmental education for science teachers. And what we did here was take the teachers out in the field. What's in their backyard? We took a tall glass of water, we took them to Chowan River, we took them to Roanoke River. Some of them had never been to some of these places that we took them. We had workshops that were inside, and then we brought the school kids in for a star party. We're going to have one more star party that we promised. The superintendent, I met with Dr. Smallwood recently, and we're going to do one later this in the fall. And the winter, that star party we held in the middle school, and we had over 300 kids and teachers. Oh, yeah. These two pictures were at the star party, and it was absolutely overwhelming. I think Was it not overwhelming?
Very much.
And we can do that again and bring a lot of information. So this is where we are now with our third report, flooding of the waterscape and landscape of this pretty Burkitt Water Crescent. So this is Scott's photograph of King Street. There's a water level recorder right here off the picture. In flood stage during, I believe this is Hurricane Matthew. Is that correct? I'm going to, later in the, at the end here, I'm going to show you some specific storms and why they did what they did. But this is something that has happened in the past and will happen again. There's two different kinds of storms that we deal with, and one of the important things that most people don't realize is that almost all of our fresh water comes from these storms. If you look at your water budget, or not your water budget, but the rainfall during the year, they all come in on these frontal systems, which are the nor'easters up here, or they come in with the tropical system, which is down here. So these two types of storms. We get 20 to 25 to 30 of these nor'easters a year. And every time the wind blows really strong, we get a front coming through. You'll see it on these water level recorders. It blows the water around tremendously. We get tremendous highs and tremendous lows as a result of that. And then you put the rain from those systems on top of that, and we have a catastrophic event. So the tropical storms are key when the upper level weather sets in. It sets in for a long period. The upper level water air systems control what happens to these tropical storms. In the summer months, the sun's up in the northern hemisphere. It's pumping heat into the equatorial current and the Gulf Stream. And as that heat builds in there, these storms, that's what makes this a habitable planet. Well, if we didn't have storms, that heat would just keep building up, and the tropics would get too hot to live in, the polar regions would get too cold to live in, and this would become an uninhabitable planet. So these storms are the things that move all that solar energy that comes into the equatorial region in the summer. It heats up those oceans, sets up the ocean currents, which drive these tropical cyclones and move heat from the equatorial region into the northern Atlantic. Crucial for habitation by a human or biologic system on this planet. And so this is how frequent they are. Okay? They're part of life. This is the record from 1851 to 2017. And there's a total of over 1,500 tropical storms that generally make up here. And they'll either move into the Gulf, they'll go up the Mid-Atlantic, or the most common route is what I call the Hurricane Highway here along our Gulf Stream. And once that upper level system sets in, then most of the storms for a period of time, for 2 months or a month in there, will follow that same track. So we had Hurricane Dorian that just came along here. We had one that sort of slid off up here, but there's one out here that just went by. There have been three or four of them that are a little bit further offshore. We didn't get them because we've been sitting under high pressure. And they couldn't come ashore. They're driven out here. They all follow that same track. And when I get to the end of this, I'm going to show you how this track is repeated over and over again. Hurricane Dorian was on an absolute track that's been followed many, many times. And we know exactly how those things move now. We have really good control through the weather system. And to show you that these things are really increasing in abundance and concentration. This is Noah's plot, what they call billion-dollar disasters, which include fires, earthquakes, but 90% of this data are tropical storms and flooding. And so if you just sort of remember that this is basically what we're seeing on the Atlantic seaboard, right here. When I was living out at the coast during these about 15 years here, we had almost no storms. Almost none. There was one or two. And the data doesn't go back that far, but if you had the data, this would come out with, let's say, 1.5 storms per year, $1 billion storm. Well, by the time we get to the 80s, this number goes up to $3 billion storms per year. The increase from 1990 to 2009, up to 5.5 storms per year, $1 billion. These are big, big events, not just the little tropical depressions. These are the ones that are like a catastrophic event. And this last 10 years, the number's up to 11 of these $1 billion storms per year. That's real. Now it's not just the storms, however, because this is an economic cost factor, and it also we have an increase in the population as we go that way. For example, at the coast, when I was living out here in the Outer Banks, in Roanoke Island, we had a very small population. Things did not start to develop like they are out there in Nags Head and all the rest of the village until the 1980s. So the population has increased here as well. So we have the intensity of these storms, but the population, so they're both going up together. And so this is our future. This isn't going to start going back down. This is going to probably continue to increase. So when Bob and I started working on the flooding part, we had to get a database. We had to go back and build a history of the dynamics so we could interpret the dynamics of these different water systems. So these were existing water level recorders. In spending my career out there in the water, the one thing I learned is that you can read a lot into how that water's changing. If you learn how to look at the air, to know what's coming at you, and you well follow that water and how those two interact, you'll come out the other end alive. If you don't, you're going to be dead meat out there in the water. These are big water bodies. And so you become very familiar how these respond. So our assumption was that water level recorders will tell us a lot. We'll be able to read them like a book. Yeah. So the existing ones on the Roanoke River, Roanoke Rapids, below the dam, Halifax, Scotland, Echo City, Hamilton, Williamston, Jamesville, and this one, which turns out to be really important, 45 Bridge. Up here at school, that's not a schoolhouse. I've always called it schoolhouse. Somebody corrected me and said, that's school road. But every time I say it, I say schoolhouse. So that's
what your types
are. And then there's the Windsor King Street, which is relatively new. When was that established? 2013, maybe? Something like that. So that's a new one. Now the rest of these have been in, most of them since the dam. School Road was put in maybe a decade and a half ago. It's been milled back. This is relatively new. But there's nothing on the lower Kashai River. There's nothing on the Chowan River estuary. There's almost nothing on the West Albemarle Sound. There's one in Edenton. It's up in the bay. And that information is good. There's one at Leonard's Point, which is the east south side of the Albemarle Bridge, but they're not turned on all the time. They're turned on when the storm's coming. I don't know who controls that, but that doesn't do us a damn bit of good some of the time. And we need that. We need somebody that can watch these water level recorders through time to develop the patterns so that you understand. And so when we decided the first thing we had to do was put some water level recorders in here. So this is where the Roanoke River recorders are. One up here, that's at the falls, two down here, Halifax, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The ones I'm going to be talking about mostly, this one, the Williamston one, and number 8. And then you got School Road here and King Street here. So Bob and I put in 4 new ones up here, one up here in the Chawanga Estuary and Coring, one down here at Salmon Creek. One here on the at San Souci Ferry, near the San Souci Ferry, and one on Broquist Creek. So this is what our water level recorders look like. They're just they look like a big fat cigar. This is the air here. This is Brad Copeland. And I would like to just say that the people who opened up their docks to us, a lot of us on their property, were awesome. They were very helpful. They allowed us to put these recorders out there on the property. They helped us get in and out when the weather was bad. And this was great. So this is Bob installing. He did all the hard work. This is Salmon Creek Dock. This is up at Coleraine, which is a rolling mine on the Kishai. This is back up Roquist Creek. We lost one to a hurricane, Hurricane Florence. You went to sea, if you're out there fishing any time and you hear a funny little pinging going on, collect a recorder for us. It's still recording. It's got probably really good information. So the water level data is like a page of a book. It's got all kinds of information on what that water is doing at that particular point in time. And this is the pattern for the Kishai River water flow. Now there's two kinds of data. There's the flow data, which is measured by a thing called cubic feet per second. We're not going to worry about that. Okay? And then there's the gauge height data in feet. And what's really important, and all the graphs I show you, don't look at this side over here, because that side, from one station to the next station, they all are calibrated to something in that station, and it's different than this station. So you can't just say they're equal. We didn't have enough money or time to recalibrate everything to a common thing. If you ever hire somebody to really deal with the flooding here, this is the first step. One of the first steps that you do is recalibrate these data. But what is important is that the flow data is exactly the same as the height data. That pattern is mimicked almost exactly from there to there. And for what Bob and I were doing, that's more than enough. We want to compare the height data, not in the height numbers, but the pattern of discharge and how the water is fluctuating as the storm goes through. So this is a similar graph. This one's for the Roanoke River. This is discharge out of the dam. And here it's at 35,000 cubic feet per second, which is high. You have water under the Williamston Bridge. When it's this high, you'll flood out lots of your farmland. And this is the daily discharge down here. And then the water, rain levels come up, back up again. So what we care about is this pattern right here. So let's look at some of these. Let's start out with the Roanoke River. There's four major water bodies we're going to talk about here. Very quickly, we're going to start out with the Roanoke River here. Then we'll go to the Kashai River, and then the Chuan Albemarle. And remember what I said, that they all interact. They all talk together. So this is the Roanoke River drainage basin. It goes way back over to the Appalachian Mountains over here. It's a big, it's the biggest drainage basin we have in North Carolina. So it collects all the rain that comes down over this area right here. This is the fall line where we drop off of the Piedmont right here. And then notice how this opens up as you go south. It's bigger and bigger and bigger. Bigger and bigger floodplains, lower and lower, flat, beautiful swamp forest. That's your lifesaver. That's what dampens all this as we come. So this is a picture looking from the river where it's incised into these granite rocks right here, the Roanoke Dam, and what I call the fishbowl. Fishbowls have a rim. If you have water going into the fishbowl, you can only go up so high, and then it starts to dribble over the edge. Well, this was a fishbowl of human making because we put a dam here. And the minute we put that dam there and back this water up here, we now have a flooded Roanoke River Valley, and the water can only get so high before it'll spill over this dam or take the dam out. No engineer, nobody that runs these dams anywhere in the world, it's an active dam, will you ever let this water back here if you can't help it get high enough to go over the top of that dam. So there's a magic number that everybody has to, downstream has to deal with the discharge coming out into this little teeny river up here, which is incised into rock. It has no floodplain. It's just naturally cut into rock. So it comes through the dam here and heads downstream. Once it gets below the rock, it becomes a coastal plain river and starts to open up. And when it opens up, you have a valley like this. This is important for Pertee County because we had 6 months from mid-September to mid-March when it was full flood stage. They couldn't go any higher. That's as high as they can go without losing the dam. Well, nobody knows at what point you lose the dam, but they're not going to let it go higher just because it's a safety built into the dam. So once you get down below the rock and you get into a natural floodplain, you have the main channel here, and the main channel, you have what we're going to call a primary floodplain, which floods every season, once or twice, three times a year. The water comes up, goes into this floodplain, then goes back down. There's a natural levee there in a back swamp, so forth. Next to that, once you get down to Halifax, you've got a secondary floodplain, which is a paleo floodplain that was part of the system of the Roanoke River back when the ice ages were here. You'll see that on a map in just a minute. This part right here, the secondary floodplain, when they open their gates and fill the river, this part of the secondary floodplain will go underwater. And this happens to be a sand ridge right there, which is farmed. If you have a farm on it, you're going to get wet when they open the gates above a certain level, 25,000 cubic per second. So the secondary floodplain is not part of the natural system. It's what's left over from previous history and dam management. And if you're going to build a dam, you got to manage it. You got to manage it upstream and downstream. And then there's a tertiary floodplain. That won't be occupied for a long time, and it'll take a whopping big storm. It's bigger than anything we've ever seen in human history here to flood this. This was formed when this was a much bigger river, much bigger floods, when we had 200-inch rainfalls, when the ice was down across the northern part of North America. This is what's left over. And you'll see that on the maps. So we have the big terrace up here. We have the little terrace over here. This right here is the part that floods all the time. Part of this will flood associated with big dam discharges. This is probably pretty safe up here. So here we're starting up here at the lake, Roanoke Rapids Lake, the dam here. If you fish the falls, they're right here. And you come out of the rock right here, and you'll notice that the river starts to develop multiple channels. You get down here to Mush Island. That pattern that you see there, that funny pattern, those are ridges of sand and swamps. The low elevation are the channels which go underwater when they flood. The high part is farm, almost everywhere down there. Comes around the corner. This right here, see how narrow that is? That's the primary floodplain. It goes from this big bluff here to this bluff over here. Then it opens up slightly, comes down here. It's pretty skinny right here. That's the primary floodplain. This, all of these old meanders, those are high. And that all of them are farm. The low areas, which are the lighter color in here, if you have a big flood, that water is going to come in here and go through there. It's going to flood your road, keep your farmer from getting down, recovering his crops or planting his crops or whatever. So this whole area becomes not underwater, but it becomes a problem. Then you come down around Caledonia Prison. This is the secondary floodplain up here. The primary floodplain is this right here, that little thing. Then we come down a little further, and we come down through this little meander system. That right there, the dark green, is the secondary floodplain. This is the primary floodplain. It's only that wide. That wide. It's coming down here. You've opened the gates now, remember. Water comes down here, and it bumps into, we call this the dog's head. You see the nose of the dog, the ears right here, the eyes up here. The water comes down here, it backs up, it floods across here, floods all this down here. So everything is farmed out here, everything is farmed here. On the low ends of this are going underwater. And they'll go underwater every time they get their water up to a certain level. And the further south we go, the river's going downhill. It's opening up, it's widening up. This is what we call riverine zone 2. So we get to riverine zone 3. This floodplain is going to light blue all the way down here. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And so we have a humongous floodplain now with a swamp forest. So from this area down to this area, this is what we call the transition zone or the super tidal zone. But when the water's high, this area comes all the way down here to Jamesville. You have a flood waters coming down here to Jamesville. And then you get out here to 45, and you don't see it anymore. Flood waters have spread out. And now this station right here in the Invade River zone out here, this is at sea level. And everything at Highway 45 talks with alveolar sound completely. And it has almost no influence from the dam up here. So if we jump to the summary slide.
Yeah,
pour over it. Roanoke River Dam. When does the bell ring?
Ding ding.
So here's an example. This is one September 2018, before Hurricane Florence came in. This was the day they discharged from the dam. And you can see Hurricane Michael here, Hurricane Florence here. When the water leaves that dam spillway, they open it, dump it, and then close it. And as it goes downstream like a wave. And it begins to spread out and becomes this more rounded and less well-defined. As we go downstream, it gets more and more spread out and uniform. We get down to Williamston on the other side of the road dam. You've all seen the water up underneath the road for 6 months this past year. That's full discharge. It can't get any higher than that without it going up to 315 feet in the lake. Okay. So what you cross here at Williamson, this is what you're seeing. By the time it gets to Jamesville, it spreads out. You still see the main peaks, but look what's coming in. Those peaks right there are Evelyn Small Sound peaks coming in on top of that flood. By the time you get to the west corner, that Highway 45, there's no evidence of this anymore. This is Hurricane Florence storm surge coming the other way, blowing the water from Albemarle Sound up the Roanoke River. So you got a push-me-pull-you going on now with the dam and the sound. And so the water went way up, came back down, went up again, then it blew out completely. And then these are frontal systems coming through the nor'easters. So two hurricanes, which we didn't get directly, but we were on the very fringes of those. So that's minimal sort of change. But if we had gotten that stream, that those hurricanes, that would have gone way up here and way down here. These are a typical nor'easter as it goes through. So this is what it looked like at Williamson. And so we can draw a summary slide here that the Roanoke River dam flow only affects down to Williamson and occasionally to Jamestown. Depends on if it's high, it goes all the way to Jamestown. If it's low, then it packs up. And you get tidal influence from Albemarle Sound all the way to Hamilton on its low flow. Now the importance of that is twofold. Because originally, this is an interpretation I had before we started looking at this data, and I think a lot of people thought that if you have a high flood system on the Roanoke River, that's going to back water up the Kashai River and increase the flooding on the Kashai. Wrong. There's almost no influence between the Roanoke and the Kashai. The Kashai talks almost, I'd say, 95% with Albemarle Sound. It always has under the most extreme conditions. And if anything, as this water pours out from Roanoke River into the Albemarle Sound, it actually might pull some of that Kashai River and at least keep it down. If not, it doesn't drain it, but it keeps it down. So if you have a storm on top of that, then you're going to get a very different response in the Roanoke than you're going to get in the Kashai. If you have a high Albemarle wind tide, that wind goes like this up there, the storm tides on Albemarle Sound. And Kitty Hawk, when the water gets blown out of Kitty Hawk, it piles up here at the western end. Winds come this way, there's the water over here. And so you'll get 5-10 foot storm surge at Kitty Hawk, the backside of the Outer Banks gets whammed, your waters here get pulled out, and the water levels drop. Blow that water, Albemarle Sound water, up here against the Chowan River Bluffs, and the Albemarle Bluffs down there, a tall glass of water. And if you put a rain on top of that now, then you have a serious problem. This is what it looks like looking up the river from Albemarle Sound. Here comes the main part of the Roanoke. Here comes the Kashai down here. It comes out here. Main part of the Roanoke goes out here. It's muddy. You can walk. It's so thick you can almost walk on it. This is a black water stream. And when it gets here, even though it's connected through the thoroughfare, it does not appear that the thoroughfare has any influence on the Kashai as it comes out here. Okay. This is a close-up now of one thing to show you how you can read, how much information you can read in a water level record. This is a record from we're still in the Roanoke River. This is Highway 45. This is a four-month record with Hurricane Florence, Hurricane Tropical Storm Michael. These are frontal systems. If we take so that's 4 months. We take the last month here. When we look at the last month, that star is the same point here. So if we blow this up a little bit more, well, we can start to see what's a tidal signal, an astronomical tidal signal. It's not very big. It's 3, 4, 5 inches, but it's very real. And it comes all the way up to King Street. And if we take the last week here and blow it up, we not only see the tidal signal, but we can see little wind freshets on top of that. And we can also see evidence, and we won't get into that, of difference between spring and summer and winter and fall. Carr Lake level, this is the limit up here, 315 feet. This is what they would like to hold it through the summer. This is that same period of time from mid-September to mid-September to mid-March. And you can see we had bursts of events back here on that fill up the fishbowl. So right here, this when Michael came across the drainage basin, it dumped a lot of rain. We had already been dumping a little bit here, but it got us. And all of these are small 2-inch rainfalls that kept this water up here. Every time they tried to quit, stayed up here, kept up here all the way through mid-March before it finally went down. And so this is just an example of Bertie County property. This is the boat ramp out there in the Dog's Head. This is what the roads look like that go through the swamps, the swales I talked about. And crops are built on the sand ridges. So the sand ridge runs down here and it's dropping down into a swale over here. Pretty soon it goes to this. So the edges of these sand ridges are what really gets clobbered. And yes, it was a very wet year, extra wet in 2018. This dark line is the we had 64 inches of rain, which was the most since 1895. But we can see a storm event here and the two hurricanes right here that were abnormal that pushed this thing up into a record level. 2-inch rain should not be keeping Roanoke River in flood. And so we were caught with the pants down, so to speak, with those first two storms, and we never caught up. So we spent 6 months, as far as we could tell, there's not a repeat pattern of that any time since that dam has been built. This is anomalous, and an important question is, will it happen again? And why did it happen this time? And this is, we get into this in the recommendations. This is just shows the effect of that dam on the natural flow of the river, which goes up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down every season. And that's the natural flow. The dam was built purposely to flatten that out. If you're going to build a dam, then you got to manage it. And you got to manage it both upstream and downstream. And so we were caught in the middle of that. And it gets to be a lot of power brokers, a lot of different elements in the room, the power companies, the lake people, the downstream farmers, everybody that has a piece of action in that river all of a sudden finds themselves in conflict. So we have some recommendations as to how we think Marquette County and associate counties ought to come and deal with that as you go forward. So, okay, let's jump to the Kashai River very quickly. NC State did a good engineering study up here in the Upper Kashai. They only dealt with the Upper Kashai. And let me remind you, all these systems are tied together. The Upper Kashai has got a Lower Kashai. And the Lower Kashai is totally connected to Albemarle Sound. And so if we're going to understand why, the question that we were asked is, why did we get such incredible floods, catastrophic floods, in Julia, Matthew, and back in Floyd, and so forth? So our goal was to try to understand the dynamics of the river. So this whole platform up here, flat, swampy platform, a lot of Pocosins up here, drain these headwaters. So there's a lot of water that comes in there. The biggest single one, however, is Hoggard's Mill Branch right here, which drains, according to the engineer study, what, 30%? Something like that, input to the Kashai River. Here's the Windsor Ridge. Okay. We have a funny little thing. I'm going to zoom in on that, because this is the transition point from the upper to the lower Kashai, where it goes in the river. So this is a profile. If you cut the river down the middle and look at it sideways, it comes from Rocks Bell up here at 90 feet, 80 to 90 feet. It's very steep up here. There's almost no floodplain. The culverts and the highways up there are little, so there's not a big water flow coming down here. We have another swamp that comes in here, another swamp. Hoggard's Mill runs a big one, School Road. These are the water level stations that we monitor. So then right here, there's a reason why Highway 17 bypass was built where it is. It's sort of the edge of this, what we call segment two. So all of this is segment one. Segment two goes from 17 bypass to 17 business here. And you're basically, Windsor's basically at sea level. And so King Street, in theory, when we started this project, is King Street, Reed, sea level activity, which would be Albemarle Sound. And the answer to that is yes, absolutely. But the only thing against the School Road, the only thing, are the storm surges. Tides, no way. The tides are little, and they don't push up here. So we're in a real special zone right here. And so if we focus in on this, this is segment one, segment two, and what we call segment three down here, which is an estuary. It's at sea level now. So the flow has dropped, the channel has dropped below sea level. So everything from Windsor east is at sea level, if there were no storms, no tides, anything, basically be sea level. Okay. Well, an aerial photograph, and this is important, because we come, here's the bypass. I should have extended this up a little further here, but you all have been to Hoggard's Mill, and the boat ramp there. Next time you're there, look at the swamp forest. It's not very big, and the river's pretty skinny. It comes down here, and all of a sudden, we've got a swamp forest. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And whoa! We've got a peninsula out here, and we have road dam, and the only place, right there, that's where the water can get out. And there's a little tributary that comes in here, and my next statement is going to be contrary to what the engineers say. I think that this is absolutely changes the nature of the flow. A lot of this has been dredged right here, but if you notice down here, we're dealing with a different kind of river down here. This is an estuary, where we're at sea level now, and we're rising sea level, and we have documentation that we probably have had at least 2, maybe up to maximum 4 feet of rise in that sea level since this early 1700s, which means that Windsor is getting lower and lower, therefore it's going to see more and more storm activity. I have a plot that will show that in a minute, but right here, you've got a lot of swamp back in here. Swamps are critical water storage bins. They soak up the water, they hold the water, the trees evaporate that water, and if you've got standing water and it doesn't flush, then you're also going to have a water quality problem. Maybe not today, but tomorrow you will, or 10 years from now. And so this water is just sitting here trying to get out this hole until it gets over the top. But if we just open this up and allow this to flush a little bit with tides, with natural tides, which you have right here, they come right up to King Street, we could improve the long-term water quality, and I think intermediate stage floods would be diminished substantially if we did that. Okay, so let's we're going to keep moving here. Bob's shaking his wrist at me. This is a close-up of Windsor. This is the incredible Windsor Ridge. That's high, 60 to 70 feet above sea. You have what no other village east in northeastern North Carolina has, and that's elevation. You talk about Columbia, Swan Quarter, Elizabeth City, they don't have any place to go. There are all sorts of villages, Goat's Neck, Newfoundland, that are underwater 3, 4, 5 months a year. Not much, but 2, 3 inches. You don't grow gardens anymore. You have to walk a plank from your porch to the car. Sea level is rising, and those towns and those villages have very few options. Where do you go? And the local people out there are beside themselves because there's been more time underwater, and it's just become chaos. Well, you have highland. You got lots of highland. And remember, I put the elevations on here. So those are old river bars right there. That's 40 to 60 feet. That's fossil. That's not going underwater. 20 to 40 feet, it will go underwater in a big storm. But you got all this light blue. That's 5 to 20 feet. So you got a little freeboard there. But if a storm like Hurricane Dorian, which was not a northeastern North Carolina storm at all, it produced a full 3, 4, 5 foot storm surge just by that little storm passing out there. So if you look carefully, and in the recommendations we talk about geozoning, and what I've learned over the years is that people don't like the word zoning, so I added the geo in front of it. All that means is let's look at the land. Let the land tell us what we should be doing associated with it. And so you'll notice that we can flood Windsor from upstream this way, or we can get a backflow up this way. And if it's big enough, then of course all that goes underwater, as you'll see in a minute. And you have just this one hole right there. And we can improve that circulation dramatically if we open this, or open this. This is short term, this will be long term, as you'll see in a minute. So the river, as it goes downhill, it gets wider and wider because the whole system's now being flooded by the Albemarle. And where it enters Thoroughfare Channel here, it's a black water stream. This is a brown water stream. And this is being captured by that, goes on out to sea. Here's the Roanoke going up here. And they don't, another colleague has been looking at the sediments in the floodplain, and there is almost no sediment in the floodplain peat. He gets 70, 80, 90% organic matter, which means the Roanoke is never gone up there. And whereas the Roanoke only has 10% organic matter. It's all sediment coming off the banks. So this is just a close-up to show the tidal fluctuation, the wind setup. If the wind blows 3, 4, 5 days, it stacks the water up. So you get these bigger things, and then you get the little tides here. Now, the next slide is, for instance, this is the St. Susie Ferry, and I'm crossing it. I haven't spent my life crossing it, but I used to be able to get, I didn't have to call, or I didn't have to ever come down and find the road flooded. 50%, 75% of the time now, I'm out here and go try to cross this road. No, that ferry's closed. And it's not closed by big storms. It's closed just because the water's coming higher. And I think you've got an incredible, somebody would just sit there and plot the days that the ferry is now closed. I think you'd see an uphill rise in that, which is an incredible indicator of the bigger scale thing that's going on here, and that's the sea level. That most people don't want to admit. I'm going to skip over some slides here, but this is one last one I'm going to show here. It shows you how Highway 45 and King Street talk together. So here's a storm surge. It comes in. There's a rainfall back behind it. You always get that hump back here. If you go down here to School Road, here you got tides. Okay, those are all tides. You blew out, I don't know what happened to the King Street corridor, but it didn't work. Okay? It probably blew out. Or maybe it wasn't turned on. We don't know that. But right there at that peak, right here we have a peak that is that same storm surge peak up at School Road. So that peak was probably right here. And then this, all of this, was this rain. We had 6 inches of rain up here. These were little rains. And then you get this big rain on top. So here's the bottom line for Windsor. You got two crucial things going on. You got a storm surge that raises the water really fast. And if you get heavy rains in the region from that same storm, and the water's still there, and that water gets back into the creek, you've got a catastrophic event coming. It's the combination of those two events. If it's just rain, just 6 inches of rain right here, without this storm surge on the front side, you probably would have, the road down there to the zoo probably would have been wet. But it wouldn't have amounted to a substantial event. So it's the combination of those two events, and the fact that that storm surge right there gets all the way up to School Road, and then you get the rain on top of it. So you've got the high water here, and that rain's going to come down on top of you. Let's skip to this slide right here. This is another storm surge slide. This is Hurricane Florence, which was not a direct hit. It was an indirect, but remember, everything's connected. So we have a record up here of Hurricane Florence. So here's School Road in the green. It's way upstream. We get a storm surge down here in the Lower Kishai River. That storm surge is exactly the same as Verona. Comes up to Kishai, takes a little bit while to get up here, but it doesn't take very long. So there's King Street. It starts dropping, and before it can get very far down, we got this rain coming in on top of it. That rain right there comes in on top of it. So you get this big hump coming down the back side. Now this was not a big event. But if you have a big event, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get the storm surge first, with the rain coming in on top. Now, if the rain doesn't come for a few days, and the storm surge drops, then you can breathe. It'll just be a medium storm. It makes a difference whether it's a catastrophic storm or just a small storm. And these things, by watching these gauges and watching the weather, as the forecasters project the track on that, how fast it's moving, and exactly where it's going to cross Albemarle Panel Cook Sound, will dictate how big your storm surge is. And you can get up to 5 to 10 foot storm surges in the western Albemarle, which we had in Israel. So this is just a statistical plot that shows you that all of these things work together. The school road is not the thing you want to watch. It's not connected, except for under this flow condition. This, what happens at King Street, right here, is very similar to the Bowling Farm, which is San Sosuke, which is where we recommend it. Okay, a couple of examples now. Marini, Julia, and Matthew, 2016, down here at the Sound. This is Hermine, major storm surge, a little rain. Up here, no storm surge, just rain. We're in a dry riverbed. The storm surge was moving, the storm was moving fast. I'll show you a plot of that. Just a second, it's moving fast. So we had a little rain. In Greenville, all these were regional events. So we didn't get it at King Street, but Greenville got pretty much the same rainfall for all three of these. And so we had a little rain, but it was a dry system. Okay, the next storm comes along, we have the same amount of rain, but a big storm surge. But down here, the smaller storm surge. So this has to be accumulation of both the rainfall and the storm surge on that one right there. Julia was unexpectedly big. Okay, the rivers were now full, so it's no longer a dry system. Fill in here. Then the next one comes in, and up here at School Road, we have a big event. And that event wasn't anywhere near as big down here at King Street. So if it's a 16-foot event up here, it's only 12-foot here. That's because the water can spread out. And as you pinch down when you go up the School Road, you end up getting a considerably different kind of pattern. But here you have all these three patterns, almost identical. And I hope the next slide is no, it's not. Okay. This just puts this Windsor in scale. You'll see the island on the side. So we come down from Telford, come down here. Windsor sitting here in 1700s. That wharf down at the Bowling Farm is under about 2 feet of water today. It was built, according to the underwater archaeologists, anywhere from a foot to 2 feet above sea level. So that means that at least a 3 foot change in sea level since 1719 when that wharf was built. Okay, so this is the original water level for Windsor. This is the present water level. And the projection on the state maps, state science panel, is for 3 feet by 2100. I can tell you the because I helped write that report. It's that's an extremely conservative report. That water is coming up faster than 3 feet in 100 years. And I, this map right here is a map you want. This is not a headlines map. This is real. This is, if we raise right now, raise sea level 2 feet, this is the land we would lose. All of that Deer County, all of this Turtle County, all of this Hyde County, up here in Currituck County, down here in Pamlico County, Carteret County. The issue is right now, because if we raise this 3 feet or 4 feet, the topography changes. And there's an old shoreline in here. And go 4 feet, and we don't lose any land out there. Well, up here, we're going all the way up here to Hamilton. But we got a road dam in the Williamson, so that probably won't happen. But you will be affected all the way along here. You are a high county. You're not one of these low counties out here that don't have any place to go. That's the good news. If you look at NOAA's, this is a flood map. That's what they call their sea viewer. They call it sea level rise viewer, but it's based on flooding. So here's a 3 foot rise. And here's King Street in yellow. You're going to lose your waterfront down here. You're going to start to flood across this area I told you before. But when you go higher than that, now this opens up completely in there. Floods all the way up in here, floods all the way down here. So you're going to lose a major hunk of your town. And this is your catastrophic event right here. And so this is right now a closed system right there. And if we opened up something in here, that surely could help take that pressure off. I'm going to show just one or two slides here for the Chowan River, because you've got a lot of shoreline out there, and there's two things that happen out there. You've got the big bluffs, and they're collapsing. And people tried developing them. The only way they've been able to develop them is to bulldoze and try to bulk it. But that doesn't work too well. That system collapses, the storms come over the top of those bulkheads. And then you get wherever there's one of these funny little, what I call ravines here. They're steep, they're deep. You have two of them on your tall glass of water that form the two boundaries. Your access to the beach goes down, right down to one of these. And out at the front of each one of these is a little cape. It's a little delta out there. It's lowland. It's naturally got a rim of cypress trees out there in front of it. This is where a lot of the old communities are. And when we get a storm surge, they're slammed. They're hurt really bad. And so I'm going to show you a couple of examples of this. And that goes up. This up area, this area right here, is protected by swamp forest. So the cliff's still there, but it's now back behind the cliff. So here the cliff is exposed all the way down there. And that's 100% eroding. And it is not going to stop. This just shows the dynamics of the wind tides coming up Albemarle Sound. If it's from the northeast, east, or southeast, you get high water up here. If it's from this direction, you get low water up here. And just sloshing like a bathtub in there. So this is a projection of the storm surge associated with Hurricane Isabel in 2003. And Isabel went right up Highway 45. The eye went right over 45. So that we had 10 feet of storm surge on the right side and almost no water back here in the Kashai. Did you have a flood in the Kashai? And so the storm, you got to think about this, the storm goes like this. And there's wind in the front side of this, but if the storm's moving fast, then you're not going to dump a lot of much water. So this was all storm surge that happened here. And this is, we were working out here at that time, and we had just put the cover, this, well, not this picture, but this is a satellite image right after the storm, when it cleared out. See all that mud in the water? That's 50 feet by 80 feet, Bertie County mud out there. As the storm goes by, like this, it sits here and pounds the coast, and we had 8 to 11 foot storm surge all along here, all the way up to there, eroding their banks. As the storm went past here, the backflow pushed this water out here and pounded Kitty Hawk, and it took all your land out here. You could have walked across that water out there, it was so thick, the sediment. This was a cover that I had on the front of a book called Drowning North Carolina's Coast, which was the title. This was at the printer in July before the storm came through. And this was one of your bluffs, big, thick clay bed, and then a big sand bed. It was 90 feet high, and there was no beach here at all. It was all clay. I got a call from the landowner and said, Rich, you better come back after the storm, take your picture again because it ain't what it was. And so I took this picture from the same point, off that point back there, and this bluff, you notice there's almost no clay left. So that's all sand, and it just melted away. It's got a beautiful beach. This is Bull Pond. You know where Bull Pond is? It's, I think that's Point Comfort. That happened in 1 hour in response to a 10-foot storm surge, somewhere between 8 and 12 feet. It didn't last very long, but the water came up. It had a 100-mile-an-hour wind on it when it went by here, and it just pounded it. And it collapsed. And you can say, okay, well, I'm going to bulldoze this and bulkhead. But that 10, 12 feet goes way over any kind of bulkhead out there. And if you have a piece of property at Ball Gray, you're fighting it all the time. You bring it in after every storm, you bring in fill dirt behind the bulkhead and so forth. And if you get a big one, it's going to be incredible. And those of you that are most familiar with the tall glass of water on this, what's the storm that you said?
Dorian.
Dorian came to you. We had a 5-foot storm surge down here. And that beach right there, this is the access road to the beach. Well, that's the access road right there. And that cliff right here, along here, that eroded based on the vegetation there, I'm guessing probably 20 feet. Scott?
That's pretty close.
About right? 10 to 20 feet in there. So that's a recession from a very small storm. It's not a direct hit at all. We didn't get any Dorian from that. And so this is just pictures of the tall glass of water and several other. So what do we do with this? Well, I'm working with the North Carolina Coastal Land Trust and a bunch of landowners up there who say, they don't want to develop this, we can't develop it, but we'd like to preserve some part of this natural resource. And this is world-class resource. This, there is no place in the state of North Carolina where you can stand at 90 feet above sea level and spit into the water. That doesn't exist. Cliffs of the Noose is on that lower cliff, which is 40 feet. Tall glass of water is down there in that lower cliff. These upper bluffs are absolutely spectacular. You're not going to stop that erosion. So let's set a part of it aside as a natural area for education, for science, for the school kids, for teachers, for people. And let me point out another unique thing, in that one of the very first film that's going to be showed on November 7th, the cultural history of sea level rise. That program starts out on those bluffs. And it starts out there because over your head, it's about 12 feet over your head, is a bed that's about a meter to meter and a half thick of pure corals, finger corals, clams, oysters, that are absolutely chockability full up there. And so the question is, with respect to sea level change, how did, today, we go down to Oregon Inlet, or we go to Ocracoke Inlet, or we go down to Wilmington, to the inlet down there, and you go behind, and you'll find those organisms living in about 3 to 4 feet of water in the sand shoals. Well, that environment was underwater during the last interglacial, when this, what we call the Suffolk shoreline that runs, the high bluff that runs behind Dismal Swamp, was the ocean shoreline. And this was a big embayment back behind it. And that, I think it starts, I haven't seen the film yet, but I think the film starts out with, how in the world did we get a bed of corals and oysters and so forth up here? And so that then goes on to develop to how we've lived with changing sea level for a long time, for centuries, millennia. Anyway, this is a resource that's really incredible. I'm going to jump with this because this is a little repetitious, but it shows how the water really changes from up and down. And here's an example of a house that's down on one of these, what I call deltas, off the ravine. And this house right here, in Hurricane Isabel, the water level was right there. That little shed blew away, destroyed the inside of the house, broke all these windows, and the dock here was ripped loose and it banged into a pine tree over here and left a big scar, which is the peak water level during that Hurricane Isabel. So that's somewhere between the 9 to 11 feet from where it is today up to that point. Well, that house was a disaster. And we now have pictures of the house. I didn't get them in time to put them in here. It was totally rebuilt. And then Hurricane Dorian, just a few weeks ago, this was a wreck line. And that was just a wimpy little storm for us. It was a big storm, but it was an Outer Banks storm. But the fact that these big water bodies back here are the elephant in the room for you.
Did the storm get the Beasley place too, or just Norman's?
Say that again?
Did the storm get the Beasley place?
I don't know.
Oh, because they're close by
right,
there.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know how far back they are. Do you know how far back?
Yeah.
This house is built right at the bottom. So
I fish out from
it.
I think it's back a little
far. It's a little right on the water. Yeah. They're up higher.
So this is, I got one more slide after this. But when this storm, this is Dorian, is down here off the South Carolina coast. I've been watching it for days. The weather service is really good. They had this pegged from the beginning, absolutely. And at some point, when I felt confident in based on the slide I'm going to show you next, the last slide, I have a fair amount of confidence that if it stayed on the track it's on, it's a non-event for Bertie County. And I sent you and Jim and Alan and Scott a little email saying, if this track holds, you're okay. If it moves just as comes across the barrier, right smack in front of the Barrier Islands, it's sitting there right off the cape. And it went from that out here, straight line out here. And if it crossed into the barrier in any form here, you would have had a major event. And the event would have gotten bigger and bigger depending on how far. If it went north, across here, then you're going to get wiped out. You're going to have a catastrophic event. It was a big storm. So from here to here made the difference whether you got nothing, or almost nothing, versus a wipeout. Now, what I've done here is put arrows in there. You've got to remember how the circulation goes around here. So this storm is moving. In this case, it's moving pretty fast. And that's the only thing that saved much of the Outer Banks, was the speed at which it was going. If it had stalled out here, for example, it would just pummel this section of the bank. This is how, when that eye was right there, this is how the currents go. So if you just sort of slide this back, that same pattern would have been repeated back here. At some point, if the storm would turn a little bit, then these bands coming around up there would have gone west. And when they go west, you're going to get maximum storm surge. As this went left the coast here, these came across Albemarle Sound, and that dampened any storm surge that was going on. And so you get just a few feet back here. Now, all this water came out and tried to go out the inlet here at Hatteras. You couldn't get out the inlet there, so they took out the northeast end of Albuquerque Island. This water was being pushed south. All of Pamlico Sound was being pushed south now, trying to get out here. We couldn't get out because DOT's built a dike out there to protect Highway 12. And it was going too fast to tear down the dike between Frisco and Hatteras, for example. It almost did it, but it moved beyond that maximum. But it did take out the island here at Ocracoke. And if it had stalled out at all, then it would have taken out most of that, a big overwash phase. What it did drive is most of this water in Pamlico Sound, out of Ocracoke Inlet, and down here over North Core Banks. It just poured out of the fishbowl over Core Banks. It wasn't a destructive flow, it was a big wall of water, and it just spilled out there. You saw headlines in the newspaper about 54 new inlets on North Core Banks. Wrong. And somebody else came out and said, well, this is the tipping, this is the end of Core Banks. Core Banks built itself for this storm. It's better than it ever was. The problem areas are the problems where we've tried to manage at Highway 12. That's my preaching for tonight. But the reason that I wrote that email is because most people don't realize the historical component. And I took just three storms, and we could put Florence on here. Florence followed this exact same track. When it got here, it turned south, back into South Carolina, and then came up here. But here's Hermine, okay? I showed you the grass trees. This was the storm that came and was going northeast. What do you see? I think this one was going pretty fast, but it's going northeast. So now you take that the circulation, and all the circulation here at a critical time is from north to south. So there's not going to be much of a storm surge here. And there wasn't. It was mostly rain. So the rain filled the system because these things occupy an area like that. But it got out here and it did this hook. And then Julia came along, so we filled the water basin here with water. Then Julia came along, it was the same track, but it was a little further offshore. But it did this hook, and it did it before Cape Hatteras, which meant that as this came around right here, it was north, the winds on the north end of that were going all of Albemarle Sound, right into the Cushai River, right up to Windsor. Then you put enough big ground on top of it. So Julia was this big as Matthew, even though it was not, it was just a tropical depression. And then Matthew came in, and it was sort of following the coast, just like Dorian was, but it went on out to sea. So you put a rain on it now, and again, this track right here, we've had that water blown and the storm surge up out in Moscow. You put another rain on it, and you brought a water pump. So we had two catastrophic events, but there were three here that set the stage for this. So these are the things you've got to watch. And I don't know if it was in my position to tell anybody up here what to do, but I felt like I had enough confidence in the data that it was going to follow this track. But if it doesn't, if it does one of these back here, or it shifts, so it goes over there, then it's going to be a Bertie storm. It's going to be a Greenville storm. It's going to be a New Bern, Washington storm. We're all in that same path. And so this is my last slide. So what I'd like to do now is maybe stretch for a bit. Have you got more time? Because I'd like to talk a little bit about recommendations. I'd like to, if you, I don't know if anybody read this, but I think we ought to hand out that document. The document is the first 12 pages of the report, which has the recommendations and the summary in it. And I hope this will help
exactly.
As we all go forward. The first 12 pages are on the and what's important, I think, is this brief summary at the beginning. Outline six or eight points, major points that we've come to a conclusion on. And the recommendations, if necessary, I started out summarizing what the problem was, and then I went to the recommendations after that. And the biggest, with a lot of these are Bertie County problems. So one with the dam, that's bigger than Bertie County. Going John Trent for him, I don't know how you go.
It's been altered.
But you can at least do your part of the work in the front. And a lot of that's already been done by people like Gene Richter and the Nature Conservancy with preservation. But I'd like to. You can have most of these questions.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But if you got a question, or you got comments, if they're dumb recommendations, we're not going to redo the report, but we'll just sort of lay out the recommendations that's done. But we're thinking not just about today, we're thinking down the road. What are you going to do 10 years from now? Where's Bertie County going to be? And my own opinion is that you have a better resource system based on natural and cultural resources than anything else. And if I were king, that would be your future. Well, I'm not king. Anyway, so probably any input?
I'd like to say this. Thank you very much for everything you've done for Bertie County, you and your group. I know we've met several times at my place, the corner door and everything. Probably the most unique thing was with the Roanoke River flooding as much as it did. It actually helped the Cache Eye because it actually siphoned water out of that Cache Eye as it drug on out. It's like you explained to me, storm surge has a lot to do with what our issues are up here also, blocking the water from going out and down the wall. But again, getting back to everything you've worked with us on for the last, I don't know, 4 years now, has been a real educational experience for me, and I know everybody else, everybody in Bertie County, understands where it is now, not just women. people four blocks will kill for everywhere else. So I want to say thank you, Dr. Rios, and all your associates.
It's been fun. Been a ball.
Very good time.
Yeah. If, you know,
and we're talking about when we look at Tallgrass Water, Berkeley Beach, over the next 10 years, maybe putting significant resources into developing there along with Coastal Land Trust and maybe others. And we've already seen the collapse of, you know, bluffs there and that kind of thing. What can you advise us as to how we live with what's likely to continue to happen, but yet to still develop in a way that it still becomes a destination for people?
You have a learning opportunity there that's incredible. And I think that if you build with, the reason you have a beach there is because your shorelines are going.
Right.
If it did not erode, you would not have a drop of sand there. In a heartbeat, if you went in there and tried to harden that shoreline, not only would you lose incredible resource, a self-renewing beach replenishment system right there. You lose the teaching moment about how dynamic these systems are. And yeah, it's a hard pill to swallow to watch your land go away. But I'm a geologist. I bought one of the most eroding pieces of land on the Tar River. I have a bluff just like your, it's the same height as your bluff. It's the same age, it's got fossils in it. It's beautiful. And it's sitting there right out on the meander, and it is eroding an average of 3 feet a year. And I've owned it now for 50 years. Where my fishing cabin used to be and my hammock is long gone. And is it going to stop? It'll never stop. And what makes it worse there are the boats. You get a wake hit with every boat that goes down there. Full tilt. And that's what happens in the Roanoke River. When the water drops and it's saturated and the water's pouring out, boats go down. That's one of the reasons why that river is so muddy. And people are totally unaware of that. Absolutely unaware of it. And this is what I tried to get the teacher's head around and said, this is dynamic. This is moving. This is changing. Not exactly like the Outer Banks, which are even more dynamic, because they're on that big pond out there. But this is going on everywhere. We're paving over paradise. We're putting concrete up there. You take the Research Triangle area, Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham, and that whole urban area out there. That's all concrete now. And all that water goes into the Neuse River. And it is changing the Neuse River dramatically. And yet, we aren't even thinking about that. What does it mean we shouldn't be developing Triangle, but maybe we should be thinking more about stormwater runoff and how these systems work and how do we live with the system. So how do you live with an eroding bank? Well, I think you teach people about it and make it exciting to go out there and appreciate the energy that's out there. Yeah. I know that's
not anywhere.
take a bottle of wine with you. I have learned about how banks erode because I've watched my bank for 50 years. And everybody says, Riggs, you may be smart, but you aren't very smart. You bought the worst piece of land on the Tar River. And that's right, I did, but I didn't know it. But I've accepted it, and I appreciate it. My big pine trees, they're this big. One by one, they go in the river with every stone. And that land's the most valuable land I've got. But to me, it's more valuable as to what it is than it is on the market. But somebody would buy it and try to bulkhead it, and it would work, because on both sides of me, there's million-dollar houses that have tried to shore up the bank. And so the last thing you should do, in my opinion, with a tall glass of water, is try to go in there and construct something to slow it down. It won't stop very much.
I'd just like to thank you and your partners for enlightening us. It reminds me of the story, everything you know, you learned it in kindergarten. So we knew it, but we never thought about it. And do you know Berkey County has the best waterway?
I've even heard the world class.
And I, one more. Yeah. There was an error I noticed.
Oh, no.
And I hope, yeah, in the additional contributions by, it should be Miss Ernestine.
I'd like to see that check.
Your honor. I've been like Beyonce, I'm gonna be mad. You find you a fucking mad. Sorry, I had to break it to you like
this. This is important.
Stop.
Investing
okay.
Federal money into understanding what happened to